This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn-Mark Roshan-Gunnison and Noel Lim. In the meantime, though, turning our attention to what's happening in some international news. If you're like me and need a strong cup of coffee to perk you up, beware, as a snap frost in Brazil has seen a seven-year surge in coffee bean prices. But it isn't just coffee prices that have been rising recently. From soybeans to wheat to sugar, soft commodities around the world have seen sharp increases, and that's reflected in food prices at the market and grocery stores.
Gasp, more expensive coffee.
I feel sorry for you, Roshan.
Like Lynn, I thrive and survive on coffee. But again, what is driving these prices is the key question we want to know, right? Because that's going to be, then that's what we're going to be taking a look at. Is this all about pent-up demand as the story goes that we're seeing more and more now, or changing consumption patterns as a result of the pandemic? And with all that in mind, is the demand even across all commodities and livestock from livestock to agricultural crops? So, how even is that kind of demand? Are we seeing it? But on the flip side, like the thing we're seeing with the semiconductors, is this also a supply issue? Because we've had volatile climate patterns wreaking havoc on crops across the world, and constraints on supply chains and logistics haven't eased either when we take a look at the pandemic situation. So how long will these soft commodities continue to escalate? And is it permanent or just more of a blip? We take a look at that right now.
Yes, indeed. And to get a deeper perspective, we're speaking with Judith Gaines, a commodities consultant. Judith, thank you so much for joining us this morning. So commodity prices have rebounded strongly this year. Are we seeing the signs of a genuine super cycle? Are the trends broad-based or are there exceptions?
Well, certainly the trends have been fairly broad-based. There's always one or two exceptions to the marketplace. And it's a confluence of factors that have actually driven the prices upwards. I can't really say that it's because of the supply constraints. It really started more because of weather problems, and that spiraled into some other issues. And then with that, a recovery in demand on a global basis has just helped to prop the markets higher still.
How long might we see this spike in food prices?
Well, in terms of the food price on the grocery store side, that's a very different story than the spike in the international market and the commodities price, because obviously many times, or at least here in the United States or, you know, in other countries, once prices go up or they shrink the size of the package so the unit cost stays the same, there are times where, you know, they find other reasons for not bringing the price back down. So in terms of the market itself and the underlying raw commodities, typically what happens is the markets spike higher, you see that the rally takes its toll, and then it accomplishes what it really is designed to do, and that is to help to curb demand and encourage increased supply. And once that happens, then the markets tend to free fall fairly quickly and go back down to the other side of the economic cycle to very depressed levels. So the higher they go, the higher they fall.
Right. And Judith, when we take a look, I think based on your first answer just now, this disruption or this kind of supply, these kind of prices that we're seeing, are mainly due to the climate changes that we're seeing. Now, supply chain and logistics may play a smaller a part in the situation in the shorter term because it makes it more challenging. But in the longer term, things like climate change seem to be more of a permanent setting in across the various crops across the world. How do you view this in terms of the kind of climate change and its effects on soft commodities?
Okay, so I think one has to distinguish between real climate change and then long-term weather cycles, because you have a combination of both. For example, let's zero in on the coffee market. The worst frost ever in Brazil, the world's largest producing country, happened all the way back in 1975. And then there was another frost in 1994, some minor frost since then, and now the frost today. So you really can't blame that necessarily on climate change. What you have is also a situation where there's been severe drought in Brazil this past year. And if you go back and you look at the records dating over 120 years, I have records actually going back 140 years, you could see that there's been other times where there was strong frost and drought during similar years as it is today. And part of that is just the science behind it, where because of the dry conditions, the cold air is able to usher in and you get a greater risk of frost. So you can't just blame that on climate change in terms of the cold weather and the current situation for the market racing higher the past 2 weeks. However, when you think about the dryness in Brazil, well, then you're talking another game, because you do have the deforestation. And normally, if you think about Brazil and the Amazon, you'd consider that there's a river water overhead, and that has dried up. And therefore, you have a tendency to have more frequent dry spells, or they're more intense. And that leads to even the wildfires, which you're seeing around the world.
Just I do want to follow up on that point a little bit. As we see things like drought becoming a bit more of a concern in Brazil, and then this impacting the ability to grow crops like coffee, are we going to see different countries and different geographies starting to come in to fill in that gap? Is that something that we're going to have to see going forward?
Well, I think it's a combination of two things. One is that other countries will have opportunities to fill in that gap, where maybe they weren't suited geographically to grow certain crops before, but now will be able to. And I think there's also technology and science behind it. You can't forget that there's increased use of pivot irrigation and drip irrigation systems to counter that. And then you have increased reliance on different seed varieties that are more drought resistant, or that shorten the growing cycle for some of the other crops. And therefore, you don't have the same impact from the drought. And then in the same countries, in Brazil, they've moved some of their production, but some of the yields that they're getting now on the trees are absolutely phenomenal. And then you have even denser plantings. And so from that regard, there's always some offsets. Technology tends to, or has been able to keep up so far.
Now, Judith, I also want to get your take on how governments have been reacting to commodity prices. Do you think they've been effective in controlling and managing these price fluctuations? What is your view of any successful or failed models of price control mechanisms that we've seen?
Okay, so now we're going to date myself. I mean, I'll openly admit that I've been around these markets for almost four decades. So when I first started in commodities, price controls were certainly in vogue. And what you had was the International Coffee Agreement and the International Sugar Agreement and the International Cocoa Agreement. And that all arose because of spiraling higher commodity prices in the 1970s. So you had, as I mentioned, coffee prices were at record high. Sugar had reached 62 cents a pound. As an example, it's currently trading 18 cents, which is very high. The normal sugar prices are between 12 and 14 cents per pound. And so you had these agreements between producer and consumer countries to try and regulate prices. But the agreements were all skewed to giving, you know, a fair price to producers also. And what happened was basically you wound up with overproduction and then a buildup of stocks. And that didn't work either. And so then each of the agreements, one by one, fell by the wayside. And then you had the problem of, what do you do with that accumulated surplus supply? And it got unleashed into the marketplaces and led to severely depressed prices in parts of the 1980s and into the 1990s. For example, the International Coffee Agreement with economic clauses fell apart mid-year in 1989, and then you wound up with historic low prices in coffee for the 2 years after that. And so trying to regulate production when you have high prices just really doesn't work well for agricultural commodities when you can have producers that take action with the high prices to certainly plant as much as possible and take advantage of it. And that's part of the whole economic cycle in commodities. And in crops like coffee or cocoa, where it's on a tree, it becomes even more difficult because of the longer growing cycle. And so by the time that producers see the production coming off their trees in response to higher prices, the market's already skidding back down.
Judith, thank you so much for joining us this morning. That was Judith Gaines, commodities consultant at J. Gaines Consulting, giving us some insight into the commodities fluctuation that we've been seeing over these past couple of weeks and months. So stay tuned for that. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.